So today, I'm going to talk about the category theory for the quasi-particle non-abelian statistics. And I think you have been have heard about the category theory maybe a lot, especially in perimeter. And so what is a category theory? You know, category theory actually is a theory of relations. That's it. So therefore, it is basically a set. It's basically a set, which we call object. If you only have object, that would be a set. So if you add extra structure relations, then this set became a category, and that's it. So what is relation? So the relation is just an arrow between two objects. Say, oh, these two alpha and beta are in relation. So maybe engaged or something. But mathematicians call this relation a morphism, you know. And I still remember when I tried to learn category maybe around 10 years ago. I tried to read a book about the category theory. And in the first paragraph, I see a morphism, which I don't know what that means. I ignore that. And in the next two sentences, another morphism, then yet another morphism, then gave up. I didn't go through the even first page. Certainly the morphism have some nice property about some natural property about relations, like alpha and alpha always related. So there's always a morphism between from alpha to alpha. If alpha and beta related and beta and gamma related, then that's implying that alpha and are gamma related. So therefore, if these two morphisms exist, then that means this morphism, alpha to gamma, also exist. Okay. And then there is a simple alpha is called a simple object. If alpha only have a morphism from to itself, no morphism to other object. Well, maybe I shouldn't say that. This is a little bit too strong. But anyway, so yeah, this is not quite right, actually. So actually, there is no. Okay, there is a collection of simple object which where there's only morphism from alpha to alpha, but no morphism between two different simple objects. So this is the right statement. So there is no morphism between two different simple objects. So this is very abstract. We don't know what it means. So actually, this is a picture to describe something very simple. In physics, let's consider a system where we have a particle which carry SuO3 representation, basically carry spins. Then that's it. So therefore, in this physical system, this particle carrying spins is our object. Okay. So then what is a morphism? The morphism actually is a local symmetry preserving deformation evolution, which can change one particle to another. So we say if two particles have a morphism, that means we have a symmetry preserving of evolution to turn one particle to another particle. And that is a morphism. So, for example, there is no morphism between spin one and spin two particle. Because no matter what you do, you can never turn the spin one particle into a spin two particle if the operation are symmetry preserving. Certainly, if you break symmetry, then the distinction between one and two may lost. So you can turn one into two. Okay. So this is a but there is a morphism between particle carry reducible representation. So the particle may carry reducible representation of SO3. So for example, one particle is a spin one plus spin two, another particle is spin two plus spin three. Then there's a morphism between these two particles. Basically, it says that if you do this symmetry preserving operation, there is some finite amplitude to go from this particle to another particle. Because both contain spin 2, basically. Yes? Yeah, I will define that later. But basically, it's your experiments, your gate voltage. Your gate voltage do not break spin or phase symmetry, things like that. Things you can manipulate the particle. Okay. So what? Actually, in this case, we try to use a morphism to define what is a irreducible representation, what is a reducible representation. So that's the use of a morphism. So somehow sometimes a particle carry irreducible representation, sometimes particle carry reducible representation, and we want to use a morphism to do that. They say, why you want to do that? Because you just say spin 1 plus spin 2, you know, why you do this? But actually, it's a physics. Actually, category theory is very, very physical. It's emphasizing on define all the concept, all the object using physical measurement. Suppose someone do not know group theory, have no concept of a representation. They just know how to do experiments. So then you ask someone, so then you should give this person a recipe, say, how do you determine this particle carry irreducible representation or not? Then you just manipulate the particle, change the particle in a symmetry preserving way. And then, this symmetry preserving physical manipulation are really this a physical way to implement a morphism. And by examining whether particles can turn into each other, what is amplitude, transition amplitude, etc., you finally figure out what is the irreducible representation. And that's it. So usually we don't worry about this at all because we don't worry about this structure. We directly use irreducible representation. And there is no morphism between irreducible representation, then that's it. We don't even talk about this. But when you think about it, before we know irreducible representation or reducible representation, and then we want to use an experimental way to determine what is reducible, what is irreducible, then this layer of structure, this morphism structure was revealed. So this is one thing. Yes?
Your definition for a simple object was?
I don't know how to define that. Maybe I should, I'm not expert kind of at all. But let me say the property. The simple object is an object which there is a morphism to itself. That's always true. But no morphism between each other. So then you can start with one object. Then you can add another object. But there's no morphism between these two objects. And you try to add more, and you try to get a collection of objects, which have no morphism between each other, but only morphism. So then this set can be viewed as a set of simple object. Maybe there's other things. But basically, is you try to figure out what is a irreducible representation by doing physical experiments, manipulations. And one example is following. Suppose you diagonalize the Hamiltonian with SO3 symmetry. You see the spectrum. You try to figure out from the spectrum what is the representation theory, what is the representation of SO3. And usually you say, OK, the degeneracy is just give you representation, but there are accidental degeneracies. However, if you be able to manipulate Hamiltonian, so to avoid all those accidental degeneracy, then you will get a simple object. This is kind of like that. And so this actually represent a philosophy of a category theory, which I find quite interesting. That is, usually when we try to understand something, like object, for example, an elementary particle, what do? We divide this object into smaller piece, a smaller building block. If we can do that, we say we gain a deeper and better understanding because we uncover the more elementary piece. And then to get an even deeper understanding, we divide the building block to even smaller building block, etc. So then we gain understanding. Okay. But however, the category theory is pretty opposite to this way of understanding. It's a different way to understand. So it's emphasized the following, is that we don't think about internal structure of object. And we just pretend it's not even there. Maybe there's no internal structure. There's no such a thing. However, what we're emphasizing on is this relation of this particle or object to all other objects. So they have all relation, all the property. Basically, that means that what is the internal object? It's our observation. But what is our observation? Observation is just we try to manipulate, try to change the object, is try to do this morphism. So these experiments are morphism are relations. And so actually, the notion of object, so object actually do not exist. The notion of object actually is just collection of relations. Basically, the collection of experimental property, this collection of property define the notion of object. So we don't even have object. So everything we have is a relation, observation. And so this is a kind of category philosophy. So for example, the face do not exist. So the face in face diagram do not exist. Only face transition exists. So the notion of a face is defined by face transition. So phase transition is a morphism. Another example is that the quantum wave function do not exist. Only our physical measurement exists. So actually, the notion of a quantum wave function is defined via all this measurement. So if you think about that, you know, who says a wave function exists? It's some human invention. All we have is double slit experiments and all that. And somehow we do not want to understand those experiments directly from those experiments. We somehow feel comfortable to inventing something wave function, which may or may not exist, probably don't exist. And then we try to interpret everything in terms of wave function. But wave function is totally a human invention. Okay, so actually, this point really points to some ways that maybe there is a categorical way to reformulate quantum mechanics without using wave function. It should be doable. I think one should get more fundamental way to view quantum mechanics. Yeah. So I'm very unhappy with the current formulation for quantum theory. Okay, so back to our particle. Statistics. So what is a tensor category? The tensor category is very simple. Just it's a category which is an object, a set plus arrows, morphism. Now we add extra structure. The extra structure is the fusion. So why we have a fusion? It's very simple. In our previous example, we're object a particle. Suppose we have two particles. Okay. But when we view these two particles from very, very far away, these two particles can be regarded as a one particle. So there is a notion or there is a blurring about two particle, one particle. Because when you have two particles, when you view from very far away, these two particles can be actually it's one particle. So there should be a relation between two particles and one particle. So this is a fusion. Okay. So for example, let's consider two simple objects. Like irreducible rotation, a spin one particle and a spin two particle, which are kind of sitting there. And when you stay very far away and view this bundle as a one object, then we find that this one object is a spin one plus spin two plus spin three object. It's a composite object, not a simple object. So this is a fusion. So you can see that, so that's why we need to introduce a composite object. Because in physics, we usually when we think about a particle, we we always think about the simple object. We never talk about the composite object. And when you fuse two particles together, we get another particle. But actually, this kind of little bit of wishful thinking, it may not always work, like in this case. If you view spin one, spin two as a quasi particle, then their fusion will not give us a quasi particle, because their fusion will give us composite object. It's not a quasi particle in our previous considered. Yeah, it's just different kind of thing. So therefore, to really consider the fusion properly, we have to introduce a simple object and a composite object. So that's why we have so we have this kind of fusion. So this is one. And then what is the braided fusion category? Because tensor category, fusion category, same thing. So I think fusion and tensor usually is the same, and it's just a fuse. Okay. And the braided fusion category is that is a fusion category, a tensor category with a braiding. We just add yet another structure, braiding. Okay. So I will describe braiding more carefully later. But here, again, that's just a considered example of a spin. Okay. So here, when you include the braiding, that means we say the spin S particle are bosons. So this boson means is a characterized as a braiding property. So if we not only have a spin S particle, that gives us a tensor category, but we also say this spin S particle are all bosons, then that gave us a braided fusion category.
Morphism from one arrangement of simple objects to another.
So this is mathematically rigorous. That is the fusion of a two particle alpha beta and the fusion of a particle beta alpha have a morphism. You can do manipulation to connect them. Maybe later, yeah. So here I just give you a general framework, and this is very, very good question. I did not introduce data or numbers to characterize this morphism, but after you introducing numbers to characterize them, you will see there's a distinct, this data is different, so there's different between boson and fermion. But just a general framework is that it's also related, because alpha beta, beta alpha is like exchange. And if you try to relate, try to deform one to another, then it's like a mapping between Hilbert space. And this mapping is a unitary operator, and that's determine this braiding property. But anyway, so if you say this part is all boson, so this boson actually is a notion in the braided fusion category. You know, in the fusion category, we don't have a notion for boson. We just know how they fuse. But the boson is notion of a braided fusion category. So if you say they're all bosons, then we get actually braided fusion category. So this is notation. So this is the notation, is a braided fusion category. But then at this level, we can see that this braided fusion categories, this is a mathematical structure, it's pretty simple. Actually describe quasi particle excitation in a gap bosonic state with SO3 symmetry and the trivial topology order. So this category is very simple. It describes trivial topology order. It's just what we expected. We have a particle which carries spins. That's our excitation. And when they braid, they are bosons and nothing else. No fractional statistics, no fractional quantum number, that's all. And so this is a trivial topology order. So this is just a very simple example. You can see that some kind of braided fusion category describe are related to the topology order. So this is really the attempt to using quasi-particle property. If you describe a quasi-particle property fully using braided fusion category, then we describe the ground state or this order in ground state fully. So this is the first example. As another example, let's consider this SU2 symmetry. And here I have this S rep, not rep. So it's not representation of SU2. So what is S rep? So S rep is like a graded representation, a super representation. It's much, actually it's very simple. Is that so this is again it's a braided fusion category. It has a particles which are described by this SU2 representations. So that's a particle or object. And the fusion of particle just a fusion of SU2 representation as usual. Okay. And however, the braiding property is different. We assign half inner spin representation, those particles as a fermion, and inner spin as a bosons. So there is a freedom to assign different representation with different statistics. So this freedom make this representation, make this a super representation, it's different representation. So it's a, so it's not representation theory actually. But this structure is called a braided, braided fusion category. And such a thing actually describe a fermionic topology order with trivial topology. The fermionic system with SU2 symmetry, but the trivial topology order, and that's it. This again is a very simple thing, but we have our big words, braid diffusion category to describe this very simple states, just band insulator fermions. And as I emphasize that, this kind of super representation and the representation are different because in the representation of SU2 group, this also form a Brady fusion category, but in this case, all the representation are bosons. So therefore, this fusion, this Brady tensor category describe SU2 symmetric boson system with trivial topology order. And this Brady diffusion category describe SU2 symmetric fermion system with a trivial topology order. So you can see all these different states, different notion have a different mathematical distinction. So that's kind of general bigger picture. So this notion of a category theory fit very well with the notion of quasi particles, and that's it. So basically, you can see morphism corresponds to manipulating quasi particles, and the fusion corresponding binding particle togethers, and the braiding corresponds to the braiding of quasi particles, and that's it. So therefore, after these three kind of structure, we can describe the quasi-particle fully. And so this is the reason why this braided diffusion category theory actually is a theory to describe non-abelian statistics. Because non-abelian statistics is basically, it's property of particles when you braid them together, fuse them together, all this is a structure. So it's pretty natural. And so from this point of view, the category theory is not very foreign, actually. It's what we do all the time, actually. When you study quasi-particles, think about quasi-particles, we're really using category notion. Just only terminology is really bad. It's a morphism, you know. The morphism is just a physical manipulation, you know. So it's hard to, because the mathematicians have a totally different motivation. So the terminology is very different from this physical motivation for quasi-particles. So that's why it's almost impossible to understand it. And for example, when people say a category is pointed, that means it's abelian. I don't know why it's a pointed, anyway. Okay, so now let's define this concept, discuss those concepts more carefully. You know, people would ask, what do you mean by manipulation? You know, and what exactly is this quasi-particle? Okay, so let's consider things more carefully. Let's try to define the quasi-particle more carefully. Okay, So usually we say the quasi-particle is the excitation above ground state. But here we'll use different way to define quasi-particle. We say that we have a Hamiltonian H which give a defined ground states. Then we add traps. So we add traps. So this Hamiltonian only non-zero near position x1. This trap Hamiltonian only non-zero near position x2. Then we try to diagonalize this Hamiltonian with trap and to see its spectrum. We assume the energy spectrum is still like this. So ground state have this spectrum. But with the trap, we still have a gap spectrum. But however, the ground state below the gap for the trapped Hamiltonian will correspond to some kind of excited state for the previous Hamiltonian. Means we may have a particle trapped by those trapped Hamiltonians, just located, localized near x1, x2, something over there. So this became precise definition of a quasi-particle. Okay. So in our previous example, this trap can be a trap which preserve a spin rotation symmetry. So we're using a trap to trap a particle and preserving spin rotation symmetry. It is possible that the trapped particle may carry some non-zero spins. So therefore, you may have a ground state degeneracy, which coming from these non-zero spins. Okay. And so this is very important. But typically, when you're using this, the quasi-particle created always carry irreducible rotation. Because the degenerate ground states correspond to irreducible rotation. But however, you may fine-tune your trap. You may have accidental degeneracy of a spin 1 and a spin 2. Then in this case, it's hard to say that whether the degenerate ground states is a irreducible rotation. Actually, when you have this accidental trap, fine-tune the trap, the degenerate ground state actually can be reducible rotation, but they have accidental degeneracy. Okay, so this became a very important point. That is the notion of a composite object is a sum. Actually, it physically means accidental degeneracy. So usually in physics, we don't talk about that because we consider generic trap, just trap reducible rotation, never trap reducible rotation. But somehow mathematician consider all the possibilities, so consider the possibility of reducible rotation. But however, this accidental degeneracy appears when you have some special shape of trap, like a two trap, but kind of far away. So each trap is reducible rotation, but these two traps together, when you view them as one trap, it's a special trap, actually trap a reducible rotation. And trapping reducible rotation is possible. So this is a case we need to consider. Okay. So this is a trap. So trap is a quasi particle. Okay. And then there is another thing. Suppose if you don't have a symmetry, if you don't have any symmetry, what happens? And people say, well, if you do this, you'll get a non-degenerate ground state. Okay. And if that is true, then I won't talk about this. That will be no topological order. Okay. So topological order just anticipates the possibility that even without any symmetry, then this trapping Hamiltonian may still have a degenerate ground state. Not protected by any symmetry, but even without any symmetry, as long as the trap are far away, you have a degenerate ground state. So this is a possibility. So we have this kind of possibility. So topological order means when the ground state Hamiltonian are special, then the trapped Hamiltonian may have a degenerate ground state. Okay. So what is the picture is that we have several particles. And these particles are trapped, are pinned. But even though they're pinned, they cannot move. We still have degenerate ground states. So this is this possibility really led to the possibility of a topological order. So that's it. So topological order is a study of the degenerate subspace with a trap. That's it. That's another way to say that. So this is very similar to our spin SO3 system. Because when you have SO3 symmetry, you do the traps. You get the degenerate state coming from SU0 representation. You can say SO3 symmetric theory is a study of this degenerate ground state due to SO3 symmetry. But topological order means says that even without any symmetry, we can still have degeneracy. So we still have a similar story. So this story is called the fusion space. This degenerate ground state is called the fusion space. It's the most crucial concept in the category theory. But in physical understanding of category theory, it's a fusion space. So when you have a few particles, then their degenerate ground subspace is called the fusion space. And this category theory is a theory to study the fusion space, the property of fusion space. Yeah, so that's it. It's kind of like the group theory is a study of degenerate ground state of the fusion space when you have a symmetry. But here, even without symmetry, we can still have fusion space, still have some non-trivial dimension, and that would be the abstract category theory. Yes.
So the traps break the symmetry, and then you're still looking for degenerate
symmetry,
is that right?
No symmetry. So the original Hamiltonian have no symmetry. The one with the trap also have no symmetry. We don't even have a translation symmetry. We don't have to have any symmetry. The only thing we have is the local. Everything Hamiltonian is local. And this is a little bit strange, is that usually without symmetry, we say we don't have a degenerate ground state. But actually the fact that we have, this is a fact. We do have an example, we have degenerate ground states. And then we want to develop mathematical theory to study this new possibility, which people overlooked before. Yeah. Okay. So then, okay. So this is a, so now let's, so once we have this subspace, now we can define all the notions. So what is object? You say object is a quasi-particles. It's just the state trapped by those traps. It's something trapped by this. Okay. But however, we have an infinite number of design of trap. We can fine-tune a parameter continuously. We have an even number of trap. That means we have even number of different kind of quasi-particle, and this we don't like. We want us to be finite. So introduce some equivalence relation. We say two quasi-particle are equivalent if we can deform, because quasi-particle are associated with a trap Hamiltonian. So each trap Hamiltonian is quasi-particle. If two trap Hamiltonian describe equivalent quasi-particle means that we can deform one trap Hamiltonian to another continuously without closing this gap. Then we say these two quasi-particles are equivalent. Basically, this is like a local manipulation. So that basically means if two quasi-particles are related, then we can use an operator near this quasi-particle to turn one particle to another, to turn one state to another. So they are different by local operators, and that's a morphism. So this is so this defines the equivalence relation. So therefore, in topological order theory, we want to consider equivalent class of a quasi-particle. That is, when two quasi-particles cannot be connected via deformation of Hamiltonian, so they are topological excision, they are really distinct. So therefore, this type, are really labeled this topological type, this equivalent class. So this equivalent class corresponds to object in the category theory. So again, we have this physical definition of an object now. Okay. Then what is a simple object? Okay. And in this case, the simple object is that if the degeneracy is robust against all the perturbation, then this quasi-particle corresponds to a simple object. So that means no accidental degeneracy. So we could design a trap that two kind of quasi-particles happen to have the same energy. And then we'll look at this spectrum. The ground state subspace actually coming from two kinds of quasi particles, like spin one and spin two. So this can happen. And this case is called, this quasi particle are composite and not simple object. So that's a one way to say that. So this is like a reduced representation. But here you have no symmetry. But we still have this notion of a composite object because we can fine tune this trap Hamiltonian to have a degenerate state, to make two particles accidentally degenerate. So physicists really don't think about this. Okay. And so therefore we have this notion of a simple and a composite. And then we have notion that every composite object is a sum, direct sum of a simple object. This direct sum is rather like a spin one, direct sum spin two. And why? Because of the following. Suppose we have a trap where we have degenerate ground states. Okay. But then we do a perturbation, we find the degeneracy is not robust. We add a perturbation near one particle, they split. They split into two groups, and again they have degeneracy. Then you can see this splitting really means that this group is one simple object. The next group is another simple object. Then in this case, we say I equal to K1 plus K2. That's how we write. So this is the one thing I'm confused, because when I learn category theory, learning statistics, there always sounds like icing onion. When the fuse become one plus psi, you know, I don't know what you mean by plus. I always thought about that it's a superposition wave function. So that's very confusing, but it doesn't make sense. So after a few years, I finally understand that this plus actually is a direct sum. So I thought this is a better notation. To not confuse the superposition of a wave function, it's really direct sum. But it should mean it's accidental degeneracy. Okay. So however, when you have a fusion, that means when you have two particles which are kind of far away, and that corresponds to a very special trap. When you view two traps as one trap, but the two this one trap have two centers, it's a special trap. This special trap may have accidental degeneracy. So that's really gave rise to this kind of fusion rule. So that is suppose I is a simple object, J is a simple object, trapped by two traps. But when we view these two traps as a single trap, just very strange shape trap, then this single trap will trap a composite object, which is sum over K, have accidental degeneracy. Yes?
So are we identifying objects with collections of spectra?
No, this object is there's no object, only relation, only morphism. So we only have I don't have an object. I try to define relation and pretend there's an object. You can see this spectrum is not degeneracy of a single point. They are total degeneracy. There's many other particles. You know, there's many other particles. And we only doing manipulation near one particle and a split spectrum. But this spectrum, you know, depend on how many particles we have in other place, the spectrum, the degeneracy can be totally different. But this notion of a simple object still there, because there's some of trap. The degeneracy just do not split. No matter how many other particles put in, and manipulating this particle never split degeneracy. And so that's making a simple. Manipulating this particle means changing the Hamiltonian, changing the trap Hamiltonian near this position. Remember, we have a trap Hamiltonian. Manipulating this particle means that we modify trap Hamiltonian a little bit and ask whether degeneracy will be split by local manipulation. If this particle are a simple object, then this local manipulation will not split degeneracy. So they are degeneracy, ground state degeneracy is a topological. But however, you cannot say degeneracy coming from this particle, because degeneracy coming from all other particles all together, you have a total degeneracy. And so what is this object? It's a little bit fuzzy. It's difficult to identify what's in it. But however, we have this fusion space of many, many particles, many, many traps. And introducing this fusion space, all these relations try to define the notion of the object. The things, this is the key, actually. You can see we are so used to think about the structures, then think about the relations. For the spin case, it works, because each particle indeed carry like a three-dimensional vector space or five-dimensional vector space. So we can think of this as a something attached to each particles. But right now, we have trouble to do that. The degenerate subspace is coming from all the particles and have all kind of properties, like whether stable or not stable. Then we try to, using all this collection of those properties, define a notion of a particle. So there's some tension here. Yeah. So the simple object is an object where if you modify this trap Hamiltonian, suppose this trap a simple object, that means a small modification of this trap will not split the degeneracy. Yeah. And the composite object is that there's accidental degeneracies. We have to trap two things with accidental degeneracy. Okay, so you can see that what we try to do is that to define something associated with each particle, try to do that, but actually we don't have anything familiar associated with this particle. So we have to really go through all these relations. So basically, all we have is a collection fusion space, this kind of degenerate ground state. But then the fusion space depends on all the other particles, kind of 20 particles, 100 particles, they each have different fusion space, have different dimensions. And from all those knowledge, all those experiments, then we try to isolate something associated with each particle. Then so we have enough data for each particle. When you have those data for each particle, then using those data, then we can try to say if we put several particles together to reconstruct what is the fusion space. You know, so at physically, we don't have anything associated with the particle. So we try to come up with something associated with the particle so that we can, using this data and do some calculation to reconstruct the fusion space. This data is kind of like a wave function, you know. They don't really exist. But once we have it, it helps us do the computation. And so the one of the data is this fusion coefficient. So that we can already define is that when you have two particles, then you get fusion coefficient. So that really means falling. When these two, when you have two trapping, say a simple object I, another simple object J, when we bring these two traps together, the spectrum will split. It will split into this a spectrum, some stable spectrum. You know, after split, this degeneracy will be stable. Let's assume we have generic splitting; they're all fully split. And then from this stable group degeneracy, then we can say, and this is like another like a simple object, but we have several sum, so that direct sum of several simple objects. So that's why we get this notion of a yes. Exactly. So this n means the following. Suppose we don't have n, so we just have a sum or like a k1, k2, k3, k4. But sometimes, like a k1, k2 are the same. For not here. Suppose they all have a 3-4 degeneracy. K1, K2 happen to be the same kind of simple object. So in this case, we say we have a 2K. Yeah. So that's it. So just like when you in the group permutation, sometimes a certain YouTube permutation appears several times. So this coefficient nijk just how many times a particular simple object appear in the direct sum, appear in this spectrum splitting. It has to be integer, yeah. So again, yeah, so those kind of things confused me a long, long time. But with this, I feel this may be a physical way to understand that. It's certainly always integer. And a positive integer also. Okay. And so this is one of our very important data to characterize the fusion category. So now this is more detailed now. So fusion category we say is contain fusion operation, but the different kind of fusion operation are characterized by this integer tensor, rank 3 integer tensor nijk. And then, so now immediately can say, okay, we can classify fusion category by pick some rank 3 tensor. Then we get a fusion category. Different rank 3 tensor give a fusion category. Well, it's not that simple. You know, if you choose a nijk randomly, it may not correspond anything which is realized by physics. So physical system only realize a certain fusion coefficient which satisfies certain condition. So one condition is that when you fuse in 3 objects, ijk, then we can fuse 2 different ways. We can first make an ij closer, so the spectrum split in one way. Then we make a bring k into this bound state. The spectrum split further. So, but then we can also bring jk together, and then for the spectrum splitting, then bring I together to this. But at the end, we should produce the same composite. Basically, fusing ijk into L should not depend on the order. But however, if you apply this result into here, you can see that the different fusion order, one says that this nijk L equal to this, another equal to this. So this index have different location. So immediately get a relation that this ijk this relation, this equal to this. So this is a very, very important relation. Okay. Then there's another relation is that if this nijk, this ij should be symmetric. So that's a big question. Should it be symmetric or not? You say, of course it should be symmetric because I and j fuse together, then dependent on j and I feels like it should be the same. But actually, no. Depend on dimension. In 2 dimension and 3 dimension higher, that's indeed I, j, j, I, doesn't matter which order. But in 1+1 dimension, there is a canonical order. Because in 1+1 dimension, the space is only 1 dimension. So there is a canonical order. So the ij will be ordered the list. So the fusion of a particle in 1 dimension actually is not symmetric. And this actually is very important. So if you describe the topology order in 1 dimension, and their fusion property is not symmetric, so you have to consider more general fusion coefficient. But however, in higher dimension, the fusion coefficient will be the symmetric. Okay. So immediately we have this we can see we have this fusion. So this ijk basically describes this fusion category. Yeah. Okay. So what is this actually can be viewed as a direct product of vector space, but in a very abstract way. So when you consider the dual product to vector space, we already have a vector space there. We know how to construct their dual product. So this is from internal structure point of view. We know their internal structure. We know how to put it together and define what is their dual product. Okay. But this is an attempt to define the, if you view ij as a vector space, this attempt to define the dual product using some abstract way. Yeah. And so when you have this structure, it's very, very tempting to say that each particle carries some degree of freedom, which is described by vector space. Then what I'm describing is a fusion are basically the dual product of vector space. So this is a very tempting, and we're hoping to have this picture. And actually for spin SO3 symmetric case, we do have this picture. Each particle, its representation is a vector space. Then their fusion are really the dual product of vector space. So this is understood pretty well. But however, in topology order case, we have something which formally satisfies the property, the fusion property, like a dual product. So this is a formally. But certainly for vector space, they deal about the symmetric, IJ symmetric. But however, but they only satisfy this formally. We may have trouble to figure out, to really associate each particle with a vector space, and to construct the total fusion space using the dual product of vector space. So we may have trouble to do that. Yeah. So this is really a notion of topology order, is that although abstractly, formally, we can have this kind of a relation. Looks like each particle carries a vector space. But when you actually try to associate each particle with a vector space, we find the vector space should have fractional dimension. You know, because even dimension don't really match. But despite we don't have a vector space, we can still have we can pretend that there's something there. So this is a notion for a fractionalized vector space. Yeah. So you can view that each particle carry a fractionalized vector space. That's a way to view this. And actually the dimension of this fractional vector space is called the quantum dimension of this particle. So this is a quantum dimension. And but what is the quantum dimension? Basically, if each vector space have a dimension, then their dual product would have dimension, total dimension of a product of those individual dimensions, just product of this individual quantum dimension. So basically, it's possible to say that this total fusion space, dimensional total fusion space, indeed can be expressed asymptotically as a product of those quantum dimensions. Yeah. So I'll study this. Maybe this. Okay. Yeah. So this is a. This is a quantum dimension. So what is a quantum dimension? Okay. So to consider quantum dimension, let's consider a single kind of quad particle, just I. We fuse many I together. And we say, what is the dimension of total fusion space? How they grow as the number of I increases? Okay. And actually we find that the total quantum dimension cannot be expressed as an integer raised to nth power when you fuse n particles. So that's make it impossible to using integer dimension, integer degree freedom for each particle to reconstruct the total fusion space. Okay. So how to compute this? So let's just follow this. Okay. So let's fuse I and I together. I together may become M1, but maybe several copy of M1. So this how many copy is N I M1? That's how many copy. And then we have the sum over M1 to get all possible M1. Then M1 can fuse with I together. So that gives us M1 I fused together became M2. And this number time how many copy. Okay. So then at the end, we get mn minus 2 fuse to I to get L. But this L, let's say, is a 1. So if something fuse to 1, that means that's give us a fusion space. It's basically the fusion space is a number of ways the part can fuse into 1. It's trivial. And trivial means allowed. Okay. So this is a 1, a trivial particle. So therefore, the number of way of this fusion is just this a sum of this just all this summation. Okay. So this actually tell us all this number just tell us in the fusion is how many 1 do we get? Because when you fuse so many I together, you get 1, you get I, you get K, you get L, you get many other things. But only 1 give you degenerate give you fusion space. But it's not single 1, many copy of 1. How many copy of 1 do you get when you fuse so many I together? So this number is how many copy of 1 do you get after fusion. Okay, now if you look at this very carefully, and okay, you can define a matrix. So that this you can bring this you see you view this I as a label of a matrix Ni, this jk as a index of matrix element like this. I hope I did this right. Okay. Then you see that this quantity actually is Ni raised to n minus 1's order with the element I and 1. Yeah, because I fuse together may appear all different M R 1 may appear. There's many different M 1 here, and each M 1 can fuse to I again. And so this is just this reaches. So at the end, we compute how many copy of 1 do we get? Yes. You also get other things. But the other things, because here I have an assumption, we put this n particle on the sphere. And when on the sphere, then only 1 is allowed. Because any other particle, you cannot create a single topologization alone. So number of 1 tell us the fusion space on the sphere. Yeah, this is more details. Yeah. Okay. And so here is to say, when n is very, very large, you know, what is the typical value of this particular matrix element? You may say, okay, maybe largest eigenvalue. You know, they grow as the largest eigenvalue. So that's it. So the di actually is the largest eigenvalue of this matrix. This matrix may not be symmetric. So there's a lot of things. So if not symmetric, the eigenvalue may not be even real. But somehow, so there's another condition. Somehow the eigenvalue should be real, and I don't know, there's other things. So those are a lot of mathematical related. So the largest eigenvalue is real, and this is and the positive real, and this is yeah. So this is the notion of quantum dimension. Okay. So that is okay. It turns out that if a particle have abelian statistics, the quantum dimension always equal to 1. And the quantum dimension always bigger than 1 or equal or bigger than 1. But if quantum dimension is not equal to 1, they have non-abelian statistics. And this is expected because when quantum dimension is bigger than 1, that means the fusion space is not one dimensional. Then when you're braiding two particles, then this degenerate ground subspace may rotate with a non-abelian barrier space, and that's it. But the abelian particle quantum dimension equal to 1, so the fusion space always is one dimension. So when you do braiding only in the face, there's no other things. Okay. So it's 1 hour. So let me see what is the here. Okay, yeah, maybe let me explain this part. Yeah. So here we have one data, Nijk. So then you say maybe the fusion category, so here with no braiding, we only consider fusion. So maybe fusion category is Nijk, that's all. Nijk satisfies those conditions. Okay. But actually it's more. The Nijk is not the data for fusion category. It's not enough. Even for the same Nijk, there's a different fusion category. Okay. To get this, to understand this additional data we needed, we have to consider, again, I have to consider the fusion for three particles in different order. Okay. So the fusion of three particles in different order. So let's consider the fusion space of ijk and L star. L star is the antiparticle of L. Okay. So what you try to do here is that this fusion space describes how many way ijk fuse into L. Then L star would fuse into 1 and give us something, the fusion space. Okay. But however, this fusion space, you have two choices, basics. You can bring ij together, so then they split in one way. And then you bring k into this and to form L, so then split in this. So each line actually is L, so each are just L. So there's so many copy of L, okay, it's just L. But however, from this degeneracy to split into this L's, different L's, so many copy of L, so there's different way. So basically, suppose you have a 10 copy of L, but this 10 copy of L have this space, this 10 dimensional space. So where, how you choose the basics? So when you do this fuse, you get 10 copy of L, you have particular way to choose the basics. That's one thing. But however, you can fuse another way is that JK fuse first, then I fuse second. Then you get a different pattern of splitting. But at the end, you still get 10 copy of L. But this 10 copy of L would fit into different basics. Okay. So actually, so this is a notation by this. So this alpha ijm is the index. Is that when ij fuses to m, when I have several copy of m, then this you have to choose some basis for, say this copy the first, that copy second, third, that's a third. So this alpha is labeled different copies. But however, this copy of m can rotate in the by unitary matrix continuously. So the alpha actually labeled the basis of this fusion space. Okay. And so when you fuse m to k again to l, but there are several copies of l, then again there's an index to label these different bases. So at the end, what I try to say is that this 10 copy of L would have a natural basis of M and these two index. So the basis of these two index just have unitary rotation, but M is a fixed. Okay. So different choice M and this alpha have a run from 1 to Nijkm. Nijm, you know. This if Nijm equal to 1, then there's no index. If Nijkm equal to 2, then this index will be 1 and 2. You have some rotations and et cetera. So the first wheel fusion gave us a natural basis M alpha, these two alpha. Then the second wave of fusion gave us another basis, the N. Now the N is here. But two different alpha. But these two basis vector, just two different basis vectors spanning the same a space of a, say, 10 copies of L. And so at N, there's a unitary transformation relation between these two. This F matrix, the famous F matrix. It's really that this actually F is a CGA symbol. You know, we'll have a sum of spins. So, you know, spin I plus spin j and spin k to get a spin L. Then we'll get many copies of L, but the basis in the copy of L can be rotated when you fuse differently. And there we call CGA symbol. And this F is exactly just like that. Okay. Yes? Yeah.
So here you also invoke symbol I of L star. So presumably L and L star always fuse to identity?
No, it fuse identity plus many things, but we only fuse one copy of identity. This is so
the multiplicity for one is only one.
When you fuse L star, it's only one. So therefore the multiplicity of this is just depend. It's really given by how many way IJK fuse to L, because L and L star always fuse to one identity, and this is a
for any L, there.
For simple object, that's important. Maybe that's how we define simple object. Yeah. So when two things fuse into one identity, that's simple object. When you fuse to many identities, it's not simple object. Yeah. That's how I define simple object. Yeah. So all this IJKL all simple object, but L star always fuse to one identity. So how many way this forcing fuse into one is equal to how many way IJK fuse into L. Yeah. So we use that. Yeah, you can also do that. Yeah. And here, when I do this, I really consider four party on the sphere. You can really do this calculation. But you fix L star. You only manipulate between IJK. So all this can be put on the computer. You can see this structure. Okay. Yeah, so this is just another way to describe. So basically, you know, there's a six copy of L, you know. it's a split and you have this F symbol. Okay, it's just this F symbol. Okay. And then something very familiar. We have four particles. Okay, and so then you can have two different way. Let's say following. You can say each graph means a different order of fusion, which give us a basis in this fusion space, some basis. The F symbol just relate the different these basis. Because they are different base of same fusion space, the F symbol just unitary relation between those bases. Okay. However, like this. So we start from this fusion way, and then end it with this way. So these are two different fusion and two different bases. But through two F symbol, we can relate these two bases. So this relation is a is two F symbol here. You do two F moves. Okay, so we have two F symbol related to these two bases. However, the same pair of bases can be related by three F moves. You can just do the fusion different order. You know, certainly this two product two unitary operation and the product three unitary operation relate the same pair of bases, so they should be the same. And this is the Pandic identity. So not arbitrary F symbol is okay. So only this F symbol has this relation is okay. So the bottom line is that Nijk is not enough to describe fusion, not enough. We also need F. So we need two tensor, Nijk and F, to describe a fusion category. And Nijk should satisfy that condition, and F should satisfy this Pandic identity. And that's it. We have a full description of a so-called unitary fusion category. And then unitary fusion category theory, in the way I describe, classify the one-dimensional topological order. So that's it. We already have a result. All the one-dimensional topological order are classified by unitary fusion category. Because this unitary fusion category describes the particle fusion. In one dimension, there is no braiding, only fusion. So all different kinds of fusion correspond to different topological order. So therefore, you can use the fusion category theory to classify one-dimensional topological order. And then you'll say, there's no topological in one dimension. What are you talking about? Well, there are anomalous topological order in one dimension. So here is a local description. We only consider local things. We do not say whether this thing really exists or not. So actually, the unitary fusion category theory describes the boundary of a two-dimensional topological order. So there are some two-dimensional topological order whose boundary can be gapped. When the boundary is gapped, then the boundary is like a gapped system. And this boundary is we call it anomalous topological order. And the particle on the boundary really described by this unitary fusion category theory. So therefore, unitary fusion category theory describe, classify anomalous topological order, which in turn classify the two-dimensional topological order with a gappable boundary. So two-dimensional topological with gappable boundary is classified by unitary fusion category. So only fusion, no braiding. And yes. Yeah, gap means you could have degeneracy, but no continuum of a. So when you have a continuum of gapless excision, that's not gappable, but degeneracy is allowed. It turns out that for two-dimensional topological order on the disk, I think the degeneracy is always equal to one. Always equal to one. There's no degeneracy, unless you have a symmetry breaking. But the degeneracy coming from symmetry breaking is not stable, because here stable supposed stable against arbitrary perturbation, and I don't know when I can prove this. But however, for local system on the disk, the stable degeneracy is only one-fold degeneracy. But on a cylinder, you know, when you have a two boundary, when you have other topology, the degeneracy can be different. Yeah, but on the disk, always a one. So all this, we hope we can obtain from this Pandic identity, all this relation, all this result. Okay. So this is basically the fusion. I feel that the fusion is the most important property and the most complex property than braiding. Although people, when talk about non-abelian statistics, people talk about braiding a lot. But actually, fusion is more complex and more non-trivial. Once you understand the fusion, the braiding is very simple. So next, I think next we will continue to talk about the braiding. But we already see that when we consider fusion very carefully, we need two pieces of data and some equation, algebraic equation, to constrain these two pieces of data. And so then that's what gave us classifying theory. And so actually, it's still challenging is that how to solve the Pandic identity numerically so we can have a table, you know. And actually, for some events, for some simple case like Fibonacci case, yeah, there can be thousands of equations, you know, hundreds of unknown, you know, things like that. You know, it's very complicated. And so we hope there's a way to do that. It turned out that when you add the braidings, things are much more restricted. And there's a simpler mathematics to do that. Maybe in the next Thursday, I will probably can cover that. Yes. Oh, the Z2, for example. Yeah, let's think of some example. You could have a trivial object, another object we call F, which if F fuses to trivial. So that's a Z2 fusion category. So this is the simplest fusion category. And this fusion category would exist as a boundary of toroidal model. So toroidal model, you know, have a condensation, but the uncondensed particle would behave like a topological excitation on the boundary. So you have so for the fusion category, what have, for the toroidal model, you have this 1, E, M, and F, for example. And you can make M condense. So M became a number. But then this when M condensed and the E and F became the, let me see. Yeah, became the same, and the 1M became the same. So this is maybe the one object, another object, but those are objects on the boundary. And those objects, when they fuse, just E squared equal to 1. Okay. So then you may say, oh, this is very simple, but can we have this kind of extension, like a 1 and a E in two dimensions? Can we have a two-dimensional topological order with only two objects? Means a trivial one plus only one non-trivial one. And the answer is a yes, but the non-trivial one has to be Samian, cannot be boson fermion. And you can think about can we have a bosonic system with only one type of topological excitation, which is a fermion? Impossible. There's no such thing. We should have more, like this case. We can have a fermion, but those have two more. We cannot have one fermion alone. That's impossible. Yeah. But on the boundary, we don't have a fermion statistic, but it's possible to have only one another have Z2 fusion. Yeah. Cannot be satisfied, yeah. And another thing is a Fibonacci, that is, I think the E and the E fuse into 1 plus E. So this is another very simple one. Yeah, so those are some examples. But for Fibonacci, this F should be pretty non-trivial. Yeah, you need to have a non-trivial F. Yeah. Okay.
Can you explain what you mean by condense?
Yeah, means when the M particle hit the boundary is a disappear. It's fused to the trivial sector. So we have a one in the boundary, and we have a, sorry, the boundary and the ball is the same. So edge, okay. So we have one on the edge, and we have M on the ball in the bulk. When the M in the bulk fuses into one on the edge, it gave us same thing back, one on the edge. It's like the edge already have a lot of M there. Yeah, throwing one more do not make any difference. Yeah, it's better to think of the model to do that. Yeah, but my message here mainly is that these two data describe a fusion and they have relations and that's fusion category. So it's not too bad. It's not very complicated. But certainly to really solve this, to produce a list, we still don't know at the moment. We really don't know. Yeah, I very much like to have a table. Yeah. I saw a lot of mathematician trying to get this table. Don't know how to define a table. What I don't know mean. Even the table, we cannot really read it. So okay, let me put it this way. The topological order already defined as a local unitary equivalent class of some Hamiltonian. And that's it. We don't need to do anything with this. But the trouble is that this local unitary equivalent class of Hamiltonian is hard to compute. So we want to do some calculation to make this impossible definition into something possible definition. So this is a so-called a possible definition, but also not so possible because it's hard to solve. So all things, it's not about a definition. We already have a definition, even in a very fundamental one. We need to come up with a simple definition so that we can compute to produce a table. This one is almost there, but not quite, which is still pretty hard. So if you do mathematical calculation to simplify this further so that you can list, give a table, then you can claim you solve the problem. Because you're changing the harder definition to something not so hard and to something simple. So all this, that's a progress. If you think about it philosophically, we already have a definition. We don't need all this. But all this is really try to come up with a simpler definition and to do the simpler search. But we still need to simplify this. This is kind of hard. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Go.
So how long time does it take to recover it?
Okay. Yeah. This is a good point. Mathematically, when you define this, there's a way to define all this. For example, this F symbol don't have a unitary can be invertible, you know, or can be other things. So this is this will be not unitary. But physically, because this splitting naturally give us, because they are energy eigenstates, they naturally is orthogonal. So the F symbol are naturally unitary. So what I try to say is that the physical system only realize the fusion category where F is unitary. There are other fusion categories where F is non-unitary. Mathematician studied that. But they are not related to the physics. So that's why we have the qualifier. This only the unitary fusion category correspond to the physical system. Yeah, so that's why the unitary. Okay, maybe I'll stop here. And so Thursday we'll continue to do braiding and lead to the. So this is the 1+1 dimension. When you add the braiding, you go to 2+1 dimension. So then you get a result which classifies 2-dimensional topology order. So this we already get the classification 1-dimensional anomalous topology order, which is 2-dimensional topology order with a gappable boundary. But now we can have when we add the braiding, we can have a general theory to classify 2-dimensional. Topology order. And also, this will be the last week for this topological lecture series. And so I think in the screen you'll see there's next week actually a mistake. I try to ask him to modify, no. And so I will travel and I'll return in the fall. If there's interest, we can continue in the fall anyway. Yeah. Thank you.